as everybody knows, Walmart's on a massive campaign to make themselves more friendly to the public in general because of some bad publicity. But now might be a good time to approach Sam's Walmart to see what they can do to filter that water before it gets into Big Creek. Just with tree planting or whatever Jim would suggest would be the best way in the short term right now to try to get all that concrete or all that water that's coming off the concrete slowed down before it gets into the creek.
I want to add something too. That's a great point. It's probably really important to get on Walmart's radar now. There are, in the final stages of discussions nationally with Walmart, they finally come to a recognition that they have really caused an enormous amount of national imperviousness. And I don't think it's been announced publicly yet, but they're in the final stages of developing a process with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and with the administrators, to make $10 billion available for habitat restoration over the next 10 years, which is a chunk change for $1 billion a year for Walmart. To promote restoration of land areas equivalent to the amount of impervious that they create. And so it may in fact become a self-funding mechanism, and certainly be getting now on Walmart's radar before the money and all the processes and stuff are in place. But there's a body of people in the environmental community that are working with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to develop a collaborative here in Northeast Ohio to route funds like from national corporate awards and fines and penalties and stuff back to the region where a lot of the damage occurred. And so we're, I think there's a meeting Monday about it. But so we're optimistic that one, we'll have a good functional group, and two, that there'll be some very interesting new national sources of funding that will be available for this kind of thing. So I would definitely urge at least communicating regularly with Walmart about this, because they need to do some things to change the way that water goes through. It's just it comes out of the park in pretty good shape, and then as it goes, as George says, it plunges past that Multnomah Road area. It's pretty well punished. It has a lot of pollutants added to it, and its temperature goes way up, and it's energized. And so the stream completely changes character and becomes an angry urban dangerous water course, and it's not a stream anymore at that point. So it has its own place.
What George brought up about the channeling of Big Creek, Paul, you've got it's a slide where there's three pictures, and one of them shows the big, huge pieces of concrete that came off of Big Creek just before it gets into the zoo area. And a lot of us who walked that this time last week, right, it's the middle one. Those aren't stones, those are big pieces of concrete, slabs that came off the channeling. And until you see that, then you're really impressed how the original flow of the river from the meander, which takes away the flooding process, it becomes channeled, and then that's when it ends up going down into the just before you get to the Harvard area, and the use of concrete. And then to bring up what Jim said, does Walmart still have plans with Steelyard Commons to connect the pathways? It does, good.
The developers actually, we're talking about the towpath.
The towpath, right.
Of Steelyard Commons, First Interstate, is actually paying for a mile-long portion, actually a loop trail that would traverse his site from just north of Denison Avenue all the way up to where Quigley Road will connect in.
Let's go to the back of the back of the front. Yes, ma'am.
Just going back to Walmart, that may be one piece that you can help with what's going on, whatever's coming off of Walmart's parking lot tails, it compares to what's in red in the soil and in the surface water and the jump there like the ocean was. I mean, it just can't possibly compare to what's going on there. This planning has been going on for a good 5 years or more. I can understand why there's no enforcement yet of that particular opportunity, because it's a gorgeous
Where are you talking about? The junkyard where?
Yeah, the junkyard right in Little Memphis. There's so many.
You mean Pearl?
Transmission fluid.
You mean Pearl? Pearl Road.
Are we talking down below Pearl Road? Pearl, yeah, I think it's the Pearl Road one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Pearl, right.
But it's just the basic regulations.
You're so right. You're so right. You couldn't be more right. There's an issue of the compliance and enforcement. And I'll give you a quick example. We were taking, a couple years ago, we were taking a federal EPA official through the Cuyahoga Valley, you know, kind of showing them, and this is a national brownfields expert, so on. And, he, you know, we were showing them, you know, industrial sites and so on. He keeps looking at us, he keeps saying, you know, this is not a, you know, watershed development. It's a pure enforcement of code problem. And this official tells a great story because he was working in Chicago, with the city of Chicago, about dealing with situations like that. He said his biggest problem as a professional EPA official was explaining to his bosses in Washington why his biggest single expenditure for his programs was for rental cars. Why would an EPA person working in Chicago be spending a lot of money on rental cars? Seems like something weird's going on. Well, what he was doing, working closely in conjunction with the city of Chicago, because they get it, where what they were doing was they were using rental cars, not municipal vehicles, to go into industrial areas of Chicago where they could surveil what's going on to enforce code. Now, that's a community that's serious about being different. Of course, we all look to Chicago as the green city, the green city, and so on. You know, $4 million green roof on this Chicago City Hall. Mayor Daley's doing amazing things. Mayor Daley stole from us a national superstar. The guy who used to head up, who helped found the Cleveland Green Building Coalition, Cedric Johnston, was recruited by Mayor Daley 2 years ago now to be the head of sustainability programs, now the commissioner of environment for the whole city of Chicago. When was the last time when the mayor of a major American city that we emulate and admire recruited one of our public executives to go work for them? And that's what it's all about. It's compliance. You're so right. This process that we're involved in is making more visible. I appreciate that. I mean, surveillance by, you know, folks, and I know that at the city of Cleveland, George, you talk about this, the city is beginning to take this very seriously. George, you talk about
just
the Lower Big Creek area.
One of the issues that's attendant to junkyards is that there's overlapping jurisdiction by a number of different environmental agencies, you know, everything from the US EPA to the state EPA, there's fire codes, you know, the fire department of the city of Cleveland, the health department. They all look at individual aspects of, you know, the situation you're describing. And in some cases, like Paul was saying, they kind of meet the minimum requirement and they'll get a checkoff, they'll get an okay by, you know, one or more of the agencies.
In the context of these plans, it seems that at some point, whoever's creating all these plans would see that there's some law. Why aren't people at the higher levels of this planning saying, let's at least get this one knocked off and checked off before we go to theater units to do the lighter things?
Right.
That's a major issue that should just have been taken care of years ago.
What's really needed is advocacy to change the state laws to have the state EPA or some other entity to be the, you know, omnibus enforcer of all those laws rather than delegating it out to all these different little fiefdoms that just take a small part of it. So maybe the CBI could serve as an impetus for lobbying at the state level for that.
Yeah, within the kind of, you know, our initiative, the Cuyahoga Valley initiative has proceeded to create a vision. We're working on a bunch of projects and so on and so forth. But the next step that we're actively working on is the design of an organization that could be responsible throughout the entire valley for its advancement and transformation. Part of that, not that this agency would be doing the enforcement, but it would be capable to spotlight, partner with the property owners. Sometimes it's an economic situation. Unacceptable, but you know, there are constraints there. And find ways to solve those problems. And again, it, you know, we don't have all the answers, and the city, I have to applaud the city and former councilwoman Merle Gordon, for example. I was invited to meetings last summer where she began to bring together all the city departments that George mentioned, fire, sewer, water pollution control, all those folks, to start to take all those people who are working in little silos and start to get a coordinated effort going. By the way, that federal public official I referred to. He's still the federal public official, but he's now working in a special task force with the city of Cleveland. So we expect to see great results. He just started taking on that job.
Yes, sir. Yes, Jim is a member of the advisory committee. You know, I get nervous that Walmart's going to spend this money somewhere else. You know, and we've heard about this about a month and a half ago. Is there, I mean, who do we contact at Walmart? It's a huge thing. I mean, the letters they get probably they never even see. If you can help us out on what we can do to talk to them as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Because very likely route on this would be the money would go and be administered by the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, who will make it available back to regional bodies like the one that they're helping to organize here in Northeast Ohio. And myself and several other people that, who you know, are taking an active role in that group to make Metro Parks be one in all the park districts to provide some rational allocations of the use of these funds. So it's not all for preservation, but a lot of the money will also go to restoration projects as well, because otherwise, if we don't invest in restoring our damaged watersheds, we're not going to see any long-term quality. There's always those, you know, arguments back and forth. We're on it. We're going to hopefully never go forward.
Jim's right. There's a really good, strong, fundamental thing going on to be able to pull down those smaller dollars. But can I just suggest something just off the top of my head? It would be useful to communicate with the store manager of the Walmart and letters, go visit with them, him or her, and just say, you know, we're a watershed group. We're concerned about this issue. There are good things, you know, you guys, you know, are right in the middle of this thing. We just want you to know, and we want to work with you. And the more the local store managers hear from the community, then you better believe that that word will be part of the chorus of voices that are going to go back to headquarters. Walmart is, in addition to the things that Jim said, there's some other things going on at Walmart where they realize, as someone said, that they're, the gentleman in the back said, that they have image problems and so on, and they're beginning to find ways to adjust. And so they need to hear it not just from the watershed, you know, experts like, you know, Jim or the, you know, the big agencies, but to hear the store managers, you know, have to say, look, I these folks are concerned about this. I keep hearing from them. And
I was thinking we would invite them to one of our steering committee meetings.
Talk to them. I mean, don't beat them up, but just say, come on in and say, look, we're working on this watershed thing. Your thing has these impacts. You can be a positive neighbor. You know, what can you do to help? Just, you know, invite them in.
Make them look good.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else? Any other concerns or insights? Yes, sir.
As far as this plan of connecting all the, you know, the green space and this and all this stuff, imagine like walking trails and stuff open to the public and stuff?
Absolutely. That trail system that we talked about is public, safe, off street, public space.
What about, I mean, along the frequencies and stuff? I mean, because I own property close to the creek. I mean, can you imagine people walking on that property?
It, you know, again, not to get into the specifics of exactly where you live and so on, let me just say some general things about trails and the impact on adjoining properties. Talk to Dan Martin, who is the parks director in Lorain County, and he will tell you story after story, and this is true nationally, but I like to have the local stuff. I can tell you about some other local things here too. Mill Creek, but let me start with Lorain County. They have developers who are coming to their offices and asking Lorain Metro Parks operation, which Dan Martin heads up, where are you going to put in a trail next? Because developers are buying property to be adjacent to those trails. And they have documented evidence that the properties, let's say you have a street that backs up to the trail, and then on the other side of the street, properties don't back up to a trail. The properties that back up to a trail sell for a 20% premium on the trails. There's a myth in the United States about the fact that people are coming out and, you know, all these bad things are going to happen because people come out on trails. There's no objective evidence that's happening. Mill Creek, Garfield Heights, or City of Cleveland near Garfield Heights, one of the poorest parts of the city of Cleveland. The homes in this brand new subdivision called Mill Creek, the homes that are closest to the trail have the highest selling price, highest value. because it's felt to be an amenity. Now, individuals may, anyway, the point is that if done right with the proper management, there is no evidence that this is a liability. In fact, it is a positive. It is a benefit. Yes, ma'am.
I bought a house 3 years ago near the Harmony Park Trail, a couple streets over, and one of the reasons I'm excited and then ended up becoming involved in Big Creek was because of the potential trail that eventually is going to be in my neighborhood in Old Grove.
Very excited.
I just have a concern where if you're going to put a trail on the back of my property, I have to go along the creek. You know, my property happens to be one of the areas where you can get the creek up to live on the north. And, I don't want people coming into my yard.
You got it. It doesn't happen.
No.
We should have an offline discussion about this, but I want to be aggressive about this because there's a perception. This is not personal, but there's a perception, and I would have that same thing too. If I got a piece of property, there's a trail in my backyard. The people who use the trails, the eyes on the trail, and so on, are the folks that actually make it safer and more advantageous. One last quick story about this issue. Two years ago now, in April, I got a phone call from the planning director of the city of Aurora. Kind of a well-to-do enclave out in Portage County. And the call was, Paul, we've got this railroad alignment coming through our community. We want to connect up with the city of Cleveland on this railroad alignment. What can we do together? It began a process of working with a few agencies, the city of Solon, the mayor of Solon is so for this, you can't believe. We are now planning a new trail which will start at the towpath in the industrial zone, go through Slavic Village, through railroad alignments, all the way through Geauga, Portage, Mahoning County, to an existing trail, about 72 miles, to an existing trail that goes from Youngstown to Pittsburgh, that goes all the way to Washington, D.C. In the ground. We will be connected to national trail systems by putting in 66 miles of trail. And this, and by the way, Jim Manick, our staff, who's been the leader on this. My point is this, that the city of Aurora, and imagine the demographics of the city of Aurora, they actively are seeking to connect up their community to other places, including the city of Cleveland. So, I'm using that as a real-world example of what communities are doing and what we all have to do together. And there are micro design issues about individual properties to make sure that it's done right and so on. But it's not like this issue that all of a sudden someone's going to take my 30-inch TV on a bike and carry off.
What was cited earlier is not too far from here, the Treadway Creek connector is going to be the first link from the west side, literally from an old Brooklyn neighborhood at Mayview and South Hills Drive. It's going to go 3/4 mile and connect down an existing, the last unspoiled natural ravine in the near west side of the old Brooklyn area. And will connect us with the rebuilt Jennings Road over to Harbors Road to the Towpath Trail. So people, the 25 or 30,000 people in the old Brooklyn neighborhood in Cleveland, including folks that work on the border on that, will actually have access to that. We went through a lot of this concerns in the vetting process with some of the neighbors. They were worried, about people coming up the trail and, vandalizing their property and burglarizing and things like that. But over a series of about a year through community meetings and through discussions with the metro parks and public park officials, they began to buy into the process to the point now where actually about six of them are signing over conservation easements to their property. That the trail can actually go through their property and they're all harmless.
Your property values will go up.
Well, this property has been my wife's family for 148 years and we're now selling.
That's beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful. That's
I have another concern. If I go to the 418 in the north.
Okay.
See that?
I'm sorry, I went too far. There you go.
The big white spot there, Tiedemann Road, 480.
This plot right here?
Yeah.
Yes.
They're dumping dirt there?
Yeah.
They're rounding it up? that dumping a dirt is changing the course of the
game? Yes.
It looks like
it. Yeah, I'm off with a customer of Panera off of 480, and as I get off at 480, I see that. And I often wondered what that was, because more of it has been happening. And I'm told that it is some fill that's going in for a potential development site. But how it's being done should be, you know, monitored and watched to make sure that there's construction erosion protection and the design of it as well. So, yeah, it all needs to be.
Well, maybe Regis.
Yeah, Regis.
Regis, you want to tell us about the
comment on that?
City building inspector keeps an eye on that. Mm-hmm. And the dirt that you're dumping in there does not go into the creek. Matter of fact, it ends well before the creek. There's a bunch of trees and a bunch of stone before the creek. I was down there about a week ago to look it out, because I heard from someone else that all of the dirt was in there and changing the course of the creek. That's not correct.
Your officials, city officials are on it. That's good. Yes, sir.
I had a question to sort of follow up to the drill question, but from a different angle. And that is, with a lot of money being spent for public access points and trails, how do you ensure in advance that those are actually going to be used to the extent that then people are going to support their ongoing maintenance? Which, you know, if they're not, you're going to have it fall into disrepair. And
great point. You have to, whatever infrastructure you build has to be maintained and in a high level of management. The trail systems that we have throughout the county, many of them, the important ones, the big, fundamental sections, many of them, most of them are operated by the metro parks. And, you know, boy, we know our metro parks. They do a great job of maintenance. Municipalities also maintain them as well. The national park, the towpath trail, is obviously maintained by the national park. And so there is some minimal maintenance cost. There's, collection of, trash that wind blows in and stuff like that. And of course, you got to maintain the wearing course of the trail itself. But it's relatively minimal. The wear and tear is not the same as driving cars over, roads or trucks over roads. That's where you get the big deterioration. But you're right. If you don't maintain it, after a while, it's not going to happen. But so far, the trails like segments that have been built in this community are wildly popular. John Debo tells a story. When they started in the National Park to build a towpath in the National Park, that he asked the staff to write down on a piece of paper what their projection was for the use of the trail a year after it's been in operation. They opened up the guesstimates of all the staff, and these are professional park people, and the use of that trail just blew away the highest estimate that anyone had. I think these things are so popular. Right now, there are over 300,000 folks that use the trail sections within Cuyahoga County and the Towpath Trail. And George mentioned that the developer of City Arc Commons is building at his expense nearly a mile of the towpath through his property. And because he expects to see, this will happen, 1 million people per year using the towpath in the, between downtown going down to the National Park. And any retailer is going to want to see 1 million people a year, users of that trail, go right by his property. They are immensely popular. They're the biggest feature that's in the country right now, trails. Because we need it for our health. We need it to get out in the greenways, the open space. We've got a national obesity problem. It's a national public health problem. And if we don't have the facilities for our kids, for seniors to get exercise, there's evidence, medical studies, and we're part of this whole elder-friendly process in the county, and there's medical evidence that older women who walk regularly for an hour every couple of days or a week can reduce their chances of getting breast cancer by almost 30%. Building a trail saves lives. And I get very emotional about this. These are not just recreational amenities. These are important infrastructure of our communities that go directly to children's health and health of all folks in the age profile. We got to get a clue in the United States about getting outside and getting exercise. Brian.
Yeah, I just want to, I'm sorry for being so late, but I want to just make a couple of observations. I was the former director of the Old Brooklyn Development Corporation, and the one who did the Treadway project that Paul was speaking about. And So there's nothing, you know, you can get emotional about certain issues, but one of the most emotional is property rights, by far. And when we did the Treadway project, I can tell you, we did a lot of research. George and I co-wrote the grant. And we saw the home value increases nationally, generally. But it's a hard pitch to make to property owners who are going to be immediately affected. So we wanted to take a step further, and we went out to Mill Creek and Garfield Park, the trail connections that go there. And what we saw was, properties that were most adjacent to the trail actually were selling for the most money. But most importantly, there was one house in particular, as we went to Garfield Park, and there was an older family who, my wife's family, had the property for a long, long time. You can get by with that relatively easily, as I'm sure Paul had talked about earlier, which was a conservation business. But their story was that they actually required a fence to be put up. And sure enough, about 2 years later, or about 1 year later, they snipped the fence so that they could have access. And about 2 years later, they just basically took it down. Because their fears about people encroaching and that were basically didn't play out, fortunately for them, and that they felt that they wanted close access. So it was very the strong thing for us, I guess, to see. And we even asked if some of the property owners like Treadway wanted to go out and see that and even meet with those people. Because I think seeing is believing in many cases. But I also want to mention one thing, and that is it's not only maintenance, it's safety and a concern for safety. And what we're doing in Cleveland is kind of new. We don't think we're going to be able to get Metro Parks to manage the Treadway project or the trail because it doesn't connect to another Metro Parks asset. So cities like Cleveland and Brooklyn, they do need to take into consideration their resources in terms of how they're going to spend, how are they going to care and maintain, how are they going to ensure safety. The park system, Paul might have talked about it, traditionally has a buddy, kind of friends of group that can get certain degrees of training, CPR, first aid, emergency training, etc. But in a lot of areas around the nation, they're volunteers. So there's a whole system that you need to figure out within your community, the best for your community, as to how you're going to maintain them, how you're going to make them safe and ensure that things go well. So,
yes, sir.
I might add, I live next to North Griffith Park, which is off Autumn Lane, a bit off there. And there's a walking area path around the perimeter. And I've never had a problem. My backyard butts right up against that walking path. I have never had a problem. Sometimes kids will run through there just as a shortcut, but I've never had any problem with vandalism. And I leave the lawnmowers out and stuff like that. Never had.
Another thing at Harmony Park, having walked through it, I see where a long time ago people threw car carts, cement. Once it's cleaned up and you are proud of a trail below you that you know people are going to walk with their children, it's going to be nicely a loose gravel, similar to what you find in Peninsula at the canal and outside of Peninsula and Hudson. People aren't going to want to pitch old cement down the ravine in the back of their property. They're not going to pitch an old refrigerator or something. There's going to be pride because it will be part of a park that connects to many places.
I have two questions. How do you deal with medical emergencies on these trails? And have you ever use eminent domain to acquire property?
We've never, the second question first, we're the County Planning Commission is not a park operating entity. So, as the county, we've never done that. It is the policy of Metro Parks, for example, not to use eminent domain. I don't know if there's any case, I know it's their policy, and I can't think of any case where they've actually used eminent domain for any of the reservation or park development. It's just not, like, they do it, through negotiation and, persuasion of benefits and that sort of thing. Now, the thing on the medical emergencies, it depends. I mean, most of us anymore are carrying these cell phones, not as old ones,
Com, as well as, you know, seniors carry the medical alert buttons and so on. So there are various technological ways. You know, I'll tell you, when I'm jogging or going down the towpath, I'll carry my cell phone, not because necessarily I think about a medical emergency, but if you observe something, you know, you pick up that phone, you just, you know, dial your EMS, or if someone's having a problem, you can be in assistance.
When you put in a path, typically how wide is that?
It depends on the path area. Like the towpath is 10 foot of asphalt, and in the national park it's that crushed limestone, yes. But the standard that we're using is sort of for the big trails is 10 foot, which is adequate for passing people in both directions, and a bike and pedestrians, so that there's not the skiers. You've got to, you know, push right past the bicyclist, past the pedestrians, or some kids on tricycles.
Is that possible for an ambulance?
Oh, yes. By the way, that's true. I should mention that. The Metro Parks, when they design their trails, they do it so that an emergency vehicle can drive down those trails. Oh, absolutely. Emergency vehicles are they plan for it, with the sub base can carry and so on, so that you can quickly get an ambulance to anywhere along the trail.
Yeah, I want to add that. Absolutely. If you look at the Ohio Erie Canal Reservation south of Hartford, I mean, you'll go there during the evening and you'll see a Metro Parks security car, ranger, whatever they are, come, you know, down the path. So Metro Parks does require 10 feet. The National Park, I think, is 8 feet.
Yeah, but in the more rural parts.
It's not as accessible.
Right. I mean, again, the standard is based on the volumes, whether it's a rural context or it's an urban thing. So I'm starting to become an advocate for certain sections of the main towpath trail that will be approaching downtown to be even wider than 10 foot, because I think there's going to be.
And the other thing, if I was thinking about the gentleman earlier was talking about concerns of being in the backyard, but you know I bring up the issue that when if you think about kids and the type of environment they like to hang out, maybe build forts or build fires or, you know, smoke cigarettes or worse, whatever. I mean, we used to build our little forts in that in parks in the old Brooklyn area, and I think, boy, if there was a Metro Parks path and that kind of visibility and access and security, we wouldn't be anywhere near that thing. You know, sneaking our cigarettes and all that. We used to go down, we used to take our dad's World War II gear and go down the Cuyahoga Valley, follow the railroad line to Brook Park Road from Old Brooklyn. And we were like 13, 14 years old. At that age, we had fears of older kids, maybe some bums hanging out down there. I mean, we used to go down there, but we had a lot of fear. So I think about, look at what opportunities you have for kids for a safe environment where they don't have those fears. If we look at, if you could back up a couple, the Oxbow. Yeah, okay, so if we look at where it says I-71 there, that's Ridge Road. We had a couple recent hikes where we were looking at connecting from there, which is the western edge of Brookside Park, to the Oxbow or Kingdom area there on the left. On the left. That's Brookside. That's the Oxbow. The old meander there of the creek?
Right.
Prior to 71, the creek used to meander north of that. There was another Oxbow under the railroad tracks. If you look at some of these historical maps, you'll be able to see
the police shooting range is now.
Right. Right, this used to be the old shooting range. It was sold to Brooklyn in 76, 77. So there's potential to allow that kind of access there. You're only talking of 1,000, 1,500 feet between Ridge and that Oxbow area. And then south of that is the Brooklyn, where they're trying to build a new town center with this new urban type of design, where people, the center of the Brooklyn area can have access into this green space corridor, and then on to this Brookside Park, Ohio Erie Canal Reservation, or westward into the Memphis Reservation. But I want to make clear, from the our organization's perspective, there's probably a lot of controversy, a lot of concerns with residents in this Tiedemann Road area. And the position we're taking now is that's something that has to be resolved with the city. We are advocating for a connection to the Oxbow area and potentially to the Memphis Park Reservation in Memphis and Tiedemann, which the mayor and some council people are behind as well. And then from Brook Park Road, the Metro Parks Reservation in Parma, through under 480, so that you can at least access the sidewalks along Tiedemann Road. So we're not making any proposals what to do along that corridor yet, but we are showing our greater vision to make some type of connection. It's important, I'm going to note here, for those that might want to leave because we said 8:30, tomorrow there is a planning meeting for the city of Brooklyn. Brooklyn residents, it is open to those if they're more interested about the master plan for the city of Brooklyn. As I said, we have an advisory committee for the Friends of Big Creek. We have Regis Barrett, who welcomed everyone. He's the chair of the Board of Zoning Appeals, the Zoning Board of Appeals. We have Councilman Tom Coyne, Councilwoman Kathleen Pucci. As Paul had mentioned also, George Cantor from the City Planning Commission. He's on our advisory committee, as well as Jim Danick, that works under Paul, and he's, I guess you could say, manages a green space, green print plan. Jim White, the Cuyahoga River RAP, and Marie Sullivan, also the RAP. Jim is one of the key people in the formation of our group. Sonia DeFiore from Metro Parks, and who else did I meet? Any other key people? We have a number of our steering committee people here. Dennis Picho is co-vice chair, and Mary Ellen Stasek is vice chair of our group, and we have a few other steering committee members. Ann Kula, Brian Cummins, who else from our steering committee? Those that are interested, more interested in our group, we have our meeting coming up on September 7th. We're trying to hold our regular steering committee meetings at the Brooklyn County's branch library on Ridge Road. You're welcome to attend those. If you want to be more engaged, learn more about these particular issues, maybe even become a member, a steering committee member, which will eventually evolve when we become a nonprofit, if and when, into a trustee. So, I don't know, am I kind of like wrapping it up here? If there's any other questions, why don't we go ahead? We got another 5 minutes, but I think, is the center open till 9?
Yes.
Okay, so why don't we go to 9:45 and then we can look at maps?
I just want to say specifically to the Tiedemann Road residents, the Brooklyn City Council has absolutely no intention of taking a property by eminent domain. And just, we invited the Tiedemann Road residents to a recent master plan committee meeting. We had a very lengthy discussion on that topic. We have absolutely no intention of taking a property by eminent domain. It's not going to happen.
Yes, sir.
Okay, but I know that is a concern because I've heard from some of the residents. So I just want to get that out of there.
Right, what happens is the sequence of events that happen.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I mean, it wasn't just one person saying it, it was just a sequence of
events. Right, I understand. We're not going to take the property by eminent domain.
Well, I wanted to give something from a different perspective. I know nothing about the development or maintenance of these properties, but I've been an active user of the park systems ever since I moved to the Cleveland area 70 years ago. Biking there as a kid, swam in the Brooklyn pool, my kids swam and fished in Big Creek Parkway, and later I did a lot of biking through the parks. We had horses for 10 years and bridle trail. And when the Cuyahoga Valley came along, I was down there. We used the exchange cabins. Bob and I have been biking together in the Cuyahoga Valley.
And I could hardly keep up with these. 80? 81?
80.
Last year, I could hardly keep up. I'm involved in so many.
There's an object.
She wants to keep going on with that.
Yeah, trouble with a 50-year-old, let alone
the final comment. I just wanted to say something about the gentleman who said something about the trails perhaps not being used. Just go down to the Cuyahoga Valley on any holiday, and you will see a board that will remind you of the Tour de France.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's a traffic jam.
Yeah.
Sunday morning on the towpath, it's a traffic jam.
I came to Ohio in the 40s and grew up in Abrams Creek, which is one of the tributaries, and I've been very fortunate to canoe the Grand River and the Cuyahoga River, and one of my dreams is to be able to get into a canoe or a kayak and be able to connect through Big Creek and to get downtown and see people walking along the path. I highly recommend that you try the, what is it, the Erie Canal Mini Museum off of Harvard and the Canalway Center. It's for hiking, biking, you see trains, you see the Cuyahoga River. It's really an excellent view of the restoration. It used to be farmland and there's rusty tractors there and everything, but it's just wonderful, and that is highly used, and it's just like 10 minutes away. So really, check out all the different trails that lead up to it, because it'll give you a very personal feeling of how eventually everything will be connected. And I've also biked in Peninsula, and so.
Just a quick follow-up to that. One of the great joys that we have in working on this initiative, Cuyahoga Valley Initiative, is taking folks on tours of the valley and taking them to places that they've never seen or just amazing stuff. And when we take people from this community, I mean the Greater Cleveland community, to the Canalway Center,
yes,
off of East 49th Street, just south of Grand Road, Grand Avenue, they come out and they go into the Interpretation Center, the Leonard Krieger Center,
yes,
and then go down the trail to the main towpath trail. I highly, highly urge anyone who's not been down there this weekend to go down and find out the map, Grand Avenue off of 77, south just go south on 49th Street at the T intersection there in Cuyahoga Heights, and experience what you experience there. It's phenomenal. And we took a group of, we take a lot of younger people down, you know, sort of the folks who want to, the brain drain people who want to keep here, and they go down there and they're just blown away, and it connects them with their community. But it's also, as has been said, an object lesson. What happens when you take these perspectives and apply them to wasteland, backland of these industrial concerns that I mentioned earlier, and turn it into a hidden asset, is phenomenal. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious if he's ever been down to the Cuyahoga Valley and went down there and saw a beaver and a deer and everything down there.
Wild turkey.
They have wild.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I have to get in my car, take four bikes, drive to Independence.
Even deer fight over my guard.
Yeah. So I have to drive to Independence with my truck, bikes in there, and I have to drive off into traffic and have to get down to the Rockside. It would just be nice if there was a connection from here that we could go to the lakefront and not have to drive through traffic. And we talked about, you know, if nobody wants to give up their land or whatever, that we would go right down Tiedemann Road, or, you know, there would, we don't want to take anybody's land or anybody, you know, that doesn't want it. We just want to have a connection where, you know, we're part of it. Everybody that moved out to Grexville wanted nature and that, and, you know, we're not here left holding the bag, nothing here, you know, we want to connect everything so we have a place to ride.
Any other comments? Anyone else? Well, we're getting, oh, one more.
I'm Andrew Ballin with Cleveland Medical Devices, and I bike to work from West Park to Midtown, and I just wanted to put my boat in as far as the trail. You know, I've seen a lot about it. Memphis, you know, over the bridge, this back road, basically what was on the screen. Just seems so natural. We have the Brookside Reservation, you have the Memphis Park, you have the highway, so you have an obvious way to get there. I know that there's a lot of hills and all, it's tough to get to, but still, people here to work with you on the council and all, I think it'd be a great idea, and I would sure use it, and it just seems so natural to have those two nice parks and a path, although it's rugged, path to get there, so hopefully you'll be able to.
Have you signed it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, I think we've reached the time we said we'd send everybody home. Thanks for coming. This has been wonderful. We enjoyed meeting the folks here and having a chance to hear from you and talk about something that's real important. Thanks very much. Thanks, Bob.
I want to remind everyone, too, our next general meeting will be September 21st, where we're going to look at this lower Big Creek area. Okay, we're going to get a study of the lower Big Creek, an update of the lower Big Creek study. George Kanner, John Beaker, others will be probably doing that presentation so we can learn what's underway right now. Okay. Thanks again for everyone coming, and make sure that you sign in. You give us some email address. We can put you on a regular email list. And make sure that you check out our new website, friendsofbigcreek.org.
Thank you. I'd just like to say thank you all on behalf of the city of Brooklyn.
You
did a great job making
this
presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks, thank you. Thanks, Jeff.
Not this one, but if you'd like, we can post it on the County Planning Commission website. Absolutely, you can do it. Yeah, please go to our website. We have two websites. One is for our agency, which we put on, the municipal work that we do with studies and so on. There's a lot of good stuff there. Our web blog, on our County Planning Commission site, is an easy way to get a lot of good information about what's going on planning issues in the county. As a matter of fact, plenty of reporters say when we come to work in the morning, we get on our web blog and we find out what's going on in the town. So, we also have another website called CuyahogaValley.net, not.org.net, which is, that's right. Just, don't have names, just links us. It's specifically dedicated to Cuyahoga Valley, so nervous.
And thank you for putting us our website on the web blog.
And also, too, I had asked Paul to give me a bio on himself and something about the Planning Commission, and I forgot to make copies. I'm going to put this up there so you can find out more, if you're interested tonight, about what the Planning Commission is doing and what Paul himself has done. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.